Welcome to Our House with one of Australia's leading auctioneers, Rod Amos, and buyer's agent, Matt Sharp. And now for your dose of information and observation about real estate across the nation. Let's go live to your host, the voice of the National Rugby League, Steve Allen.
Yeah, welcome to episode 2 of Our House. Great to have you on board. Hope you're doing well. And as promised, we're off to my old hometown, Palm Beach, and also Fremantle in WA. We'll put those two suburbs under the microscope a little later in the episode. Right now, though, let's get to the boys. Matt Sharp from Sharp Property Buyers and Rod Amos, famous auctioneer from Ray White, Terrigal. What's caught your eye in the last week?
Market continues to be really strong. Again, if only we could get the banks to process applications quicker. The number of buyers that I have backed up right now, desperate, Matt, to transact on properties, are still waiting 4, 5, 6 weeks. We've heard these stories of cooling offs going from 1 week to 2 weeks. Heard of one cooling off, 5 weeks. It's a worry for vendors when you're basically tied up with a buyer for that amount of time.
Yeah, well said. I just wanted to touch on what Rob was talking about then. So we're talking about extended cooling off periods, right? But is the settlement date changing? That's what I want to know. Because you're talking 5 and 6 weeks. Are we extending settlement periods, or are you basically finishing a cooler and then 2 days later, you know, the new purchasers are getting the keys? I'm curious.
Very good question. Sadly, the settlement date only starts from the time the contract's exchanged. So throughout the cooling off, no, it's just ongoing. So that means that that vendor may have been working on the fact they needed to be out by the 1st of September. All of a sudden, it's looking like the middle of October because the buyer's finance hasn't come through. Now, that's one thing we're facing consistently with private treaty sales. And while we're moving to other methods, auction's one of them, there's another method again, whereby buyers will be constrained not knowing they'll be happy to do an exchange under cooling off, Matt. So for anybody not familiar with the term, that's put down 0.25%, and that locks the vendor into yourself while you arrange finance. Now, it's not the buyer's fault, but when it may be going on for 3 or 4 weeks, the vendor is locked into that buyer, has to reject any other interest or offers from other buyers. And when I tell a buyer it's under contract, but I can still show you, they don't want to look at that, because it's just going to be a waste of time. So what we find at the end of 4, 5, 6 weeks sometimes, that buyer falls over, the finance didn't come through, that particular vendor is back to square one. So we do have a solution for vendors rather than face that situation.
Rod, you mentioned auctions. You know that I've had a relationship with Ray White Thompson Partners for a couple of decades. James and Luke Thompson, family-run business. They've had a tremendous 2020, but as you'd know, they're probably one of the most successful auction Ray White offices around the country. What are you seeing? What numbers have you seen so far this year?
Basically, Ray White Terrigal, we've achieved 90% of sales on or before auction day, and that's because the buyers are motivated to move forward. Also gives them transparency. The beauty with the auction facet, Matt, is the vendors aren't tied up with cooling off. You only buy at auction once your finance is approved. That removes a huge risk factor for our vendors under the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And as soon as that hammer goes down, you know, it's the buyer's property then, straight away. I'm not a big fan of auctions. I try and steer my clients away from them because, you know, it's a heated environment. There's lots of emotion. Sometimes dad rolls out and he rips out his wallet, you know, to try and get the house for the wife or for the kids at any price.
You go to the red corner, you go to the blue corner.
No, I was just saying, Matt, I love that because that's every reason, as you said, we believe that our vendors are going to average a far better result at auction than private treaty because it creates the competition. Matt's advice, look after his buyers. You may have to pay more if you purchase at auction. Well, again, I think we've just understood what the difference might be for a vendor when they're considering going to private treaty or going to auction.
Matt, on episode 1, you spoke about people looking for a sea change coming up from Sydney to the Central Coast, which is roughly 45 minutes to an hour north of Sydney. Are you seeing a lot of interest, though, around the second airport in Sydney? And tell me what numbers you're seeing.
There's certainly some interest out in those suburbs in the investment space. Obviously, with Sydney, you know, huge population growth, so naturally people are going to be heading out towards that direction anyway. If I was going to invest there, I'd probably be, if I was a really long-term investor, so I'm talking plus 25 years, I'd be considering that area. I'd have to double check some numbers on the acquisition costs for those properties in that area. But yeah, I'd certainly be considering it for an investment point of view as well.
How about you, Rod? The interesting thing with this, if you could buy an established home close to the area, it's going to be, I'd imagine, a worthwhile investment. Again, I agree with Matt. I'd always be very wary about investments that are springing up out of the ground, supposedly to service that market. I think for the habits of people, the thought of flying out of Mascot compared to flying out of the western suburbs is going to be a demographic shift, a shift of habits. And again, I'd always been relying on established property where we know the infrastructure, we know the services, and we know that with all that in place, more likely to find the right kind of tenant that's a quality family who might want to rent that property.
Whenever we do any of our research, you know, we're looking at past results, and in no way do past results always represent future results. But a lot of the information that some developers are putting out there are on things that haven't happened yet, right? They're predictions that are going to happen in the future. So if you're a first-time investor, or maybe you're a bit of a novice, I'd be treading very, very carefully when looking at those suburbs, especially if you're looking at home and land, because I know there are a lot of new developments going out there. If you absolutely want to invest out there and you feel as though no matter what, that this is going to perform well for you, certainly I'll be going for a well-established home or an established dwelling.
Matt, you mentioned that you lived in Manhattan in episode one. You said that it's your favorite city in the world. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It is my favorite city in the world. I've been lucky enough to travel to Europe multiple times, obviously to the States multiple times, and throughout Asia. And yeah, New York is certainly my favorite city. Just the culture is phenomenal. So diverse. You can do absolutely anything you want to do at absolutely any time of the day. Yeah, really, really good time over there. I recommend anyone to visit it once everything gets back to normal, I suppose.
You didn't buy in New York. What about elsewhere in the world?
No, I didn't buy property when I was overseas. No. You know, anywhere in New York, on Manhattan, you know, again, it's that scarcity. You know, they can't redevelop land there. They can't produce more land on Manhattan. So it's extremely tightly held. So they can only go up. But, you know, if I was going to buy in New York, I'd be looking around the West Village somewhere there. I really, really love that little pocket. Other countries or other cities, I would certainly be looking around Italy. I was lucky enough to be in Italy last year. A nice little cottage in Positano would probably do me just fine, overlooking the water, the Amalfi Coast. I love a glass of red and love pizza. So I'd be probably, my two picks would be somewhere in New York or Positano. Yeah, Rod's probably in the super yacht at the, on the Amalfi Coast, looking at all of us plebs up on the hills. So I'd say that's the real estate he'd be buying over there.
Look, I've got to say, if I was going to buy somewhere overseas, I think it'd be Asia. I wouldn't mind one of my own little islands in the Maldives. One thing Matt and I were talking about after last week's show that was probably worth reiterating is that the stock appears short, but simply because it's turning over virtually in half the time it was this time last year. So we're seeing the sales and the volume still holding up fairly well, but all intents and purposes, when you look at the market, there's less for sale signs, and that is instead of taking 8 weeks to sell, average transactions throughout the coast, and this is actually following up with some other agents, tends to be down to roughly 30 days on market for most properties.
That's really, really quick, isn't it? Really, really quick. And interesting data, because it can be a little bit misleading unless you look at it holistically, right? If you only consider, oh, there's low stock, there's nothing there, you know, people think that there aren't many listings, but it's very interesting that he's mentioned that they're actually, the listings are the same, but they're just getting snapped up quick. And it's the same old story, like quality properties presented well, priced well, they're going to go quite fast, right?
What about capital cities?
Well, basically, we've had the reports that come up that we've seen a decrease in the key average median figure right around Australia, with the exception, strangely enough, of Hobart and Darwin. Now, whether they isolated better, they're holding up. But at the same time, it's been nothing like the forecast downturns that we expected going back in March that we'd see around Australia. In most cases, Sydney's come off at about a little under 1% decrease. Melbourne's at about 2%. But really, that's about the worst case scenario. Perth's been static for a while, so not being affected. And Adelaide, probably very positive.
Yeah, Adelaide is positive. It's very, very stable, Adelaide. But I mean, when you just look at the capital cities, you know, when you concentrate on just the capital cities, typically they have the biggest rebound. So they'll have the biggest, you know, the peaks and probably the biggest troughs. And then as you move away from that, the impacts, you know, are much more subtle. So the regional areas are holding up quite well across not only New South Wales, but across Australia.
Matt, want to get your thoughts on this. New loans for June were released in the last week. So owner-occupiers up 5.5%, investor housing up 8.1%, first time buyers up 3.3%. Now, we've got to be mindful that these numbers are down 10%. compared to March.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a positive story, right? I think it's a really positive story. There are people that are confident in the economy. We probably, you know, we're in uncharted waters in terms of the pandemic that we're currently experiencing, and people are still confident. I think those numbers are really positive, and hopefully it continues to increase, you know, towards the back end of the year.
Every episode, we take a look at suburbs around the country. Last week, Matt took us to Hallett Cove in South Australia. As promised, we're going to my old hometown, Palm Beach, Currumbin on the Gold Coast. Love it up there. My whole family's still there. The 4221 postcode, and just a couple of my favourite spots. Every time we're back, we head to Cafe Moto at 23rd Avenue. Obviously, the surf club, Palm Beach, and also Currumbin. I was in both of those surf clubs. Always, every time we're there, have a round of golf at Tally Valley. Little nine-hole golf course that's tucked away. If you drop into the Palm Beach pub, you'll bump into someone that you went to school with at Palm Beach Currumbin or Palm Beach Primary. It's devastating that the Currumbin Hotel was knocked down for a development. It had the world's greatest view of all time. And of course, surf at 25th Ave or the Alley, and I'm right at home. I guess maybe just a stroll around Burleigh Hill, the national park there. And you got family in Burleigh too, Rob?
Yes, my eldest daughter's been doing a pretty good job, she and her husband, of flipping properties. They actually decided to sit it out at this stage on a recent renovation, but they've been up in Burleigh Waters for the last 8 years now. Start off with a rental property, bought the home virtually behind their rental property. Three daughters, eldest one just started high school, and they're firmly entrenched up there. Funny enough, when we look at the property values and the lifestyle, it equates very similarly to Wombril and Terrigal. Certainly, probably greater population density up there, but when we're looking at the price of getting into property, very, very similar to what we see in 2260.
All right, let's crunch the numbers. What are we seeing in Palm Beach, Queensland? So the 4221 postcode, my old hometown, I absolutely love it there. I've kind of wanted to go back there for the last couple of decades, but, you know, we're raising a family on the Central Coast. So let's take a look. Rod, what are you seeing?
Well, look, basically, when we look at the median growth, now, bear in mind, median growth can be deceptive, can't it, Matt? It's not necessarily comparing apples to apples. We said last week, sometimes it might have been the original Fibro one that sold for a set price, and then that's resold as a higher-end property. But the median's the closest we can get to it. Nonetheless, we've seen an average price of $560,000 inflate somewhat to $942,000. In fact, Palm Beach has shown some of the strongest growth that I've seen across the Gold Coast suburbs. Suburbs like Broadbeach, Mermaid Beach, from the figures I've seen, probably don't appear to be as optimistic. Medium sale price this year was $918,000. A suburb growth over the last 12 months equated to 5%. So given all the other trends, this is current figure applicable right now. So nonetheless, that's a very, very positive return for people who have bought property up there.
Their best year was 2003, 26.7% growth. And they've had a couple of great years since 2015 with 224 sales, 14.9% growth, 16.1% in 2017. And so far in 2020, we've seen 58 sales.
Yeah, it's performed really, really well. And like Rod said, it's just on the back of, you know, lifestyle, affordability. People are always going to want to be there. Lack of stock on the market, you know, lack of developments, good infrastructure. You know, I'm probably wishing, Steve, you had stayed there. I guess you're wishing you probably had stayed there or at least maybe bought a property and kept it there. And, you know, you'd nearly be cashing in right now.
In that suburb of Palm Beach, you've got a couple of shopping centres. So you've got Elanora Shopping Centre, but you've also got the huge Pines shopping complex. You've got easy access to the motorway as well, and that's just been upgraded, particularly at the north end of the coast where it's now a six-lane highway. So there's been lots of infrastructure changes. Who's living there? Are you seeing breakdowns in demographics, Rod?
Look, I think it equates very much to what we're seeing here. It is established families and those wanting their family lifestyle within close proximity to all the services, whether it be the beach, whether it be shopping centre, recreational activity, the walking.
Oh, I forgot one cafe, boys. The Beach Shack at Currumbin. We try to go there every time we're on the Gold Coast and miss all our friends and can't wait to get back up there. By the way, every surf club is outstanding. So I mentioned Palm Beach and Currumbin, but Tally's got a great surf club as well. Currawa, you name it. If you want to sit right on the beachfront and enjoy the view and a couple of beers, all roads lead to the surf clubs. Well, now we're off to Fremantle in WA. It's a suburb that I absolutely love, and I've got some great intel from one of my dear friends, Helen Moore, who lives about 10 minutes away. Helen, by the way, one of the best news readers in Australian radio, but she's taken a hiatus from media as she raises her beautiful family. So shout out to all of our friends in WA. When we do these suburbs, we try to find out what the locals love, and there's far too many to mention right now, but here's a few of Helen and a friend's favourite places. And we start in South Frio, Little Lefroy. Also in South Fremantle, Port City Roasters, Duck Duck Bruce, The Attic, More and More Cafe, Angel House, Strange Company, Bread in Common, Little Creatures, of course, the famous brewery, The Local in South Frio, The Federal, The National, The Norfolk, Raw Kitchen, Sweetwater in East Frio, Whisper Wine Bar sounds good to me, Ronnie Knights, Young George in East Frio, Clancy's, Eat No Evil, and the Sunshine Harvester Works. And one that they really love is Hutong and Lincoln in South Frio. So, Maddie, what are you seeing in gorgeous Fremantle?
Yeah, so WA, it's had an interesting sort of two decades, I guess, going back to sort of 2002, where, you know, if we look back at 2002, median house price at $364,000 in Fremantle. And, you know, there was a slight increase there and a pretty consistent growth, actually. It was performing quite well until 2007. And then on the back of 2007, obviously, we had the GFC and they'll hit quite hard. And I know Rod, you know, elaborate a little bit more on this than what I can, but, you know, heavily reliant on the mining industry there, and I think that they took a huge hit for that. Unfortunately, for Fremantle and people over in WA, you know, the growth's been very stagnant and it's plateaued for since 2007 to basically to date. So the median price in 2007 was $760,000, and in 2020, the latest data we have is 729. So still in a little bit of a recovery phase, I guess. There are some pretty astute investors, you know, really looking into WA and Fremantle now, having a look at some infrastructure there. And they're starting to say that, you know, numbers are starting to tighten in terms of listings. You know, there's some more confidence around purchasing in that area and also the Perth market in general, and lack of stock, lack of development. And that could create a bit of a bubble effect there. And we could see some growth going forward.
So that's coming off 40 sales in 2020. By the way, in my opinion, it's one of the world's best cities. I absolutely love it over there. Love Frio, love Scarborough Beach, where they've held the Aussie surf titles on numerous occasions. In fact, we were over there earlier this year for the Rugby League World Nines, where I was the Master of Ceremonies and Stadium Announcer. So we just had a fantastic time there. Got a lot of dear friends over there. And if we could, it's such a livable city. Rod?
Steve, I've often said that I used to travel there for work myself, and it was the city that I felt the most comfortable after living on the Central Coast. Gold Coast isn't necessarily my cup of tea, but there's just something about Perth. As I say, you have the bluest water, the way that reflects it from that sand. It is absolutely unique there. Good lifestyle, good infrastructure, but again, the thing that's obviously holding the real estate prices down there are your employment prospects there as solid as they are on the East Coast, whether that's the Gold Coast and Central Coast. I'd say looking at the house prices, that's always indicative of what the economy, of what spending money, of what demand's doing. I would not think, probably quite as positive, but great lifestyle stuff.
Matt, you're the buyer's agent. Are you going into Palm Beach? Are you going into Frio? Give us your opinion.
I'm going to go to Palm Beach and I'm probably going to move there. I'm going to live there. You pretty much sold it to me. I love coffee, I love having a beer, and I love going to the beach. So they're three ticket items for me. Frio, I actually haven't visited Frio. I've heard great things. However, it's a little bit isolated for me. If you want to get to anywhere, obviously, you know, it's a 4 to 6 hour flight. So park me at Palm Beach, mate, and I'll be a very, very happy man.
By the way, just looking at the property trends, if you bought in Fremantle in 2002 and you jumped out of the market in 2007, you probably would have doubled your money, right?
Yeah, by the looks of that, you would have done really well. As you know, as the most experienced investors and property people will tell you, though, it's very, very hard to pick the market. You're best just to get in and stay in for as long as you possibly can. But yeah, certainly you would have done quite well.
Rod, Palm Beach or Frio for you?
Well, we're just talking about the Fremantle growth over 20 years. It sounds good until you look at the comparison to Palm Beach, where basically it's more than trebled. So Frio's doubled, Palm Beach is more than trebled. If I had $1 million there, I'd be a richer man than you in Fremantle right now. You know, I'm not a gambler, but I'm looking at statistics here, and Fremantle has been that soft for so long that if I was looking at a 10-year plan, I'm actually going to put my money into Fremantle rather than Palm Beach. That's as an investor and possibly as a lifestyle location.
What about this, boys? Are you seeing breakdowns between houses and units? Because a lot of units in Palm Beach.
Look, I haven't got the statistics. The ones I've done, because I think they're generally a better guidance. When we're looking at these suburbs, we see more houses. So I'm afraid I cannot tell you the units. It is simply based on houses. The one thing I can tell you is the weekly rental return. Because if you're looking at a rental for houses, you've had a 7% increase in rental return 12-month year-to-date. It's returning, according to my statistics, through Price Finder, 3.5% rental yield. Units are another matter. So this may be an oversupply situation. There's been a decrease of 4.5% in the value of your rental. That's your weekly returns from rentals, generally averaging around 3.8% rental yield. So nonetheless, the yield is very, very similar to that of homes.
I think you just got to be careful whenever you're considering an apartment, you know, for an investment. If you want to live there, that's totally fine. But oversupply is obviously a big one. I know Palm Beach is quite tightly held. So, you know, if you could find an apartment there in a little boutique apartment lot, I think you'd do quite well.
All right, boys, final words to wrap up episode two.
Get up to Palm Beach by the sounds of it. I think Steve's done a pretty good job to sell it. I know where I'm going on my next holiday, considering we can't go overseas.
By the way, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for listening wherever you are, whether it's here in Australia or maybe overseas. And if you've got some suburbs you want us to put the microscope on, we can do that absolutely for you. Where are we off to next week, Rod? Pick a suburb anywhere in the country.
Well, look, let's do one of the larger regional towns, one that had been the retirees' paradise, and that being Port Macquarie. We're starting to see a little bit of a shift in there. We've got all the new motorway. You basically drive to Port Macquarie in about 3 hours these days. We'll put Port Macquarie under the magnifying glass and dwell down into what property values there, and if you're an investor, as a return.
What about you, Matt? Where are we off to?
We're going to head down to the COVID hotspot state of Victoria and move towards Geelong. I think, you know, Geelong's got some really, really interesting data, so I'm really looking forward to sharing some insights.
And I want to go out west to a place called Griffith, where a dear friend of ours lives. She's a speech pathologist, and she's looking to buy her first home. She was the underbidder, and she was so excited about the chance to buy a property there, but just missed out. She's looking at the mid-threes for a property. We'll find out what's happening in Griffith on our next episode of Our House. Boys, great to see you.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Matt. You have a great week, and we'll catch up for the next podcast.
Thanks so much, guys. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, boys. And we're back next week with another edition of Our House. Just before we go, the information on this podcast is general in nature. You should consider if the information is appropriate for your circumstances. And of course, seek professional advice where possible. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Our House.